You're listening to GNU World Order. My name is Klaatu, and in this episode we're going to talk about AutoMake. AutoMake is another component in the Auto Tools suite by GNU, the GNU group, organization, project. It is a build system, AutoTools is. In two episodes ago, I think, I spoke about AutoConf, and we got up to a certain point with AutoConf where we had generated a configure script, which you're supposed to be able to run, or rather your users are supposed to be able to run, in order to generate some awareness of what system is about to be compiled for, after which your user could run make, and then make install, to read from the make file instructions on how to assemble the package that you've distributed. So I guess the first thing before we start talking about AutoMake, we probably should just talk about make files. And these are interesting entities, make files are. I'm going to switch to my demo directory, and I'm going to make make file example directory, and I'll change directory into there. And the interesting thing about a make file is that it's really difficult, I think, to fully comprehend maybe what the advantage is. Because if you look at a make file and you look at a shell script, one seems really, really flexible and the other seems really, really rigid and limited. And it's not the make file. The make file is not the one that's flexible. It's very rigid and a little bit restrictive. Compared to, say, a shell script. So what's the selling point of a make file? I don't know. Maybe a listener has an answer for that. But for me, I don't know what the selling point of a make file is, but I have a notion of what the selling point of the whole system is. And make files are the thing, they're the configuration file, or the set of instructions, I guess, that the make command leverages. And so for that reason, in order to be able to use make and auto tools in general, I think you kind of get stuck with a make file. Is it a good thing or a bad thing? Well, potentially it's a good thing, because as we've seen in many things in the past, computing and otherwise, sometimes restrictions are good. They bring a level of maybe sanity or at least predictability to your system. So if you've got a set of rules that you simply don't let people break, then the variables involved necessarily go down, because you're catching the exceptions before they even get through the door. You just know, well, you can't do that in a make file, and so I'm not even going to attempt to parse the rest of your file because you did this thing wrong. And it's frustrating on the one hand, because if you're just trying to get a thing to work, it's frustrating to be told, nope, that's not allowed. You used spaces instead of a tab there, you're out. We're stopping here. You think, couldn't you have just gone into quirks mode for me and just made that happen? Well, sure, but now we've got more variables because we're running in a quirks mode. Did it work or wouldn't it work? And if it didn't work, was it because we're running with a bunch of exceptions, or is it because we're running, you know, it's very, very predictable. So, make file. Pretty simple syntax, I guess, in a way. So if I do Emacs, I'm going to do GNU make file, GNU, all capitals, M capital, and then AKEFILE, GNU make file. That technically is the default name of the GNU make system. It looks technically, I believe, if I'm remembering correctly, it technically looks for GNU make file first, and then make file second. That said, GNU make specifically advises you to use makefile as the name of your makefile, because that's what everyone else uses. So they say, unless there's a specific reason that you're using, you know, that GNU make has to be run against your makefile, don't call it GNU makefile, just call it a makefile. So I'm calling it GNU makefile here just to set it apart from a normal, actually useful makefile. But in real life, I would just call it makefile. Actually, in real life, I wouldn't be writing this. Well, I'm lying. I write makefiles semi-regularly, because I use them to build docbook projects, and AutoTools doesn't really know a whole lot about how to send commands to XSLT proc and so on. So anyway, in real life, if I were building a code project, I wouldn't be writing my own makefile. That's the important thing to know. I would be letting AutoMake create my makefile for me, and that's what I'm advising really ultimately for you to do, unless you have reason, I guess, not to. So a makefile consists of a set of rules, and a rule looks like this. It has a name of the rule. It has the prerequisites required for that rule to execute, and then it's got the recipe. So the very, I guess, probably, I imagine, the simplest makefile I can think of is to make a single rule called hello, H-E-L-L-O, colon, and then I'm going to hit tab, I think. Well, we'll find out together anyway. So hello, tab, and then really nothing is required here, but I'm going to require foo to exist. So just type in foo. I guess now I'm not doing the simplest possible. I'm doing a version of a simple makefile. So I've done hello, colon, tab, foo, and now I'm going to the next line, tab, and then I'm going to do echo, quote, hello world, close quote. Okay, that's my makefile. So it's hello, colon, tab, foo, and then the next line, tab over, echo, quote, hello world, close quote. Now I'm in a directory, and I've got just like a new makefile. I'm going to run make, and we found the first bug. So apparently I got the naming scheme wrong. It's not GNU makefile with a capital M. It's just G and U all capitals, and then makefile all lowercase. So I'm going to rename this file from GNU m akefile to GNU and then makefile. There we go. Okay, now I'm going to type in make, and it gives me an error, and that's okay because this one's expected. It says no rule to make target foo, needed by hello, stop. Okay, so what it's telling us here is that a prerequisite of running the hello rule was that there's a file called foo. Now I can get around this a couple of different ways, and one of those ways is just by doing a touch foo. So now the file foo exists, and now if I run make, I see the output that I expect, or the output that I expect. It might not be the output someone else expects. What I see is, and this is literal, this is what I see, echo space quote hello world close quote next line hello world. So I'm seeing the command that is meant to run spelled out, and then I see the results of that command. And the reason for that, and I'm gonna go back into my makefile here, new makefile, is because the command that I provided on that second line of my two line makefile is just the command. It's echo hello world. If I put an at symbol in front of my command, so now I've got at echo space quote hello world close quote. Now if I run make, all I see is the output, no command. So the at symbol in front of your command in a makefile tells it essentially to silence, or to run quieter, to run less verbose than if there were no at symbol in front of that command. So it suppresses the echoing of the command, whether it's an echo command or a remove command or a move command or whatever, a touch command, whatever. Okay, so now if I remove foo, of course I wouldn't remove foo, I would trash foo because I might need foo, and remove is forever, and trash only sends it to my trash can. So I would trash foo. Now if I run make again, of course I get that error about there being no rule to make the target foo, and that's needed by hello. So what I could do, I said there were a couple of ways to fix that. One of the ways was to simply create the file foo, but in real life, that's not typically the answer. In real life, usually, that would be another rule in your makefile. So I'm going to make a new rule in my makefile, called foo, colon, and there's no requirement for this one, so I'm not going to put anything next to this. This is foo, colon, and then I'm going to go to the next line, tab, and then I'm going to at touch foo, save that, and make. And this time I don't get an error for hello world, because hello, when that rule was encountered, hello saw that it required foo, and so it checked to see whether the conditions of the foo rule had been met. They had not, because foo doesn't exist, and so it makes foo on the system. Now that that condition is met, the hello rule can continue, and it does by echoing hello world. So if I do an ls on my folder, I have a file called foo that's been recreated, and then I've got GNU makefile. So there you go. Now I could also, if I wanted to get fancier, I could do a Emacs GNU makefile. I could make yet another rule called, let's do clean, colon, and then hit return and tab and trash foo. Save and close that. Now I'll do a make yet again. I get my hello world. I do an ls. I got foo and GNU makefile. Now let's do make clean. Tells me that it just trashed foo. I do an ls to confirm, and that is correct. There's no more foo file in my directory. And so you see that when you do a make, for instance, make install, what you're really doing is you're calling, or a make clean if you've ever done that, you're calling a rule specifically from a make file and telling make to execute that recipe. So if I wanted to, for instance, make foo, I can do that now. I can do an ls, and there's make foo. And now that I've done that, I could also run make hello. The condition for foo has been met, so make hello works as expected. Hello world. I've still got a foo file there. And then, of course, I could make clean again, and now I'm back with just a GNU make file. That's how a make file works. There are a lot more little tricks to make files. You can make yourself variables in a make file, which is handy. So for instance, if you've got the title of a book or something that you want your files to be renamed to after they've been built, then you could create a variable that would stand in for the name of the book. And maybe if you've got a working title, then you can plug that working title into your variable, and during all of your test builds and so on, it's just going out as the working title. And then once you settle on the title, you can swap that out for your real title. And then when you build your book, it gets named for after your real title or something like that. You could also make you can use conditional statements. And so you can say, if this command exists on this system, then use it, and otherwise use this other command. So if it was a situation where you weren't sure whether your user was going to compile your code on a Linux system or a BSD system, you weren't sure if they were going to be using BSD tar or GNU tar, then you could check for that. You could look to see whether BSD tar exists on that system, and if it does, then use that, and otherwise use this one, or however you wanted to do it. So it's a very it's not a very flexible system, but it's got the basics. It's got the basics of what you might need to make decisions for a process, and it doesn't excel at that. And I think that that's something that you can kind of tell that it doesn't excel at that. You don't see people using make files in the place of, say, a shell script for, I don't know, launching an application or something, or you know, making a wrapper around an application that needs to be launched. You don't see make files and GNU make being used to make that happen, but you see make files being used in build systems. And I think that the rigidity of the make file and the cascading dependency model, I think that just kind of makes it appropriate for a build system. You could even probably argue that it might even be appropriate for some administrative tasks. Before Ansible existed, for instance, I could see you looking at the make system for possibly some administrative tasks where you don't want a rule to run if something already, or you only want something to run if something does not exist, for instance. So that could be a thing that you could check. But it's not a very system wide, and it's not a very sort of holistic system. It is very very much understands the folder that it's been installed into, and it knows what file structure to expect. And I feel like making it do anything beyond just sort of managing a project directory is probably abusing that system. So that's a make file. You can write them yourself. You can see that I've just done that. You can use commands within the make file. I mean, anything on your system you can use in your make file. So if you want to install something, you can use the install command. If you want to copy something from one directory to another, you can use the cp command. You can do all of those things. If it's on the system, makefile has access to it, and you can make that happen. The question, I think, is whether or not you would really want to write your own makefile. And I think more often than not, the answer is no. for the same reason that the answer is no if you were to ask yourself, for instance, should I just write my own shell scripts to act as the installer for my project? And the default answer to that might actually be yes. You might think, yeah, why not? And there are really good reasons why you shouldn't. And I've seen some of these things happen. I've seen projects where you go to them and you download it and it says, to install, just run this shell script, or this little install script. And you look at the install script and it looks fine at first. It does all the normal installs. But then at one point you realize, oh, but this install step here wants to install everything to /user/share/docs or user docs slash something, but I put all of my docs in this other place, or it wants to install everything into user bin and I really want to put everything in user local bin, or this accounts for 5 different translations but the default language is some other language that I don't understand, and so I'm getting error messages in a language that I don't know. How do I switch it such that this other language is the default one? Weird things like that. They pop up now and again, and I would say it's the fault of the developer, really, because it's an investment, it's a time investment, an effort investment to learn a build system. But I think at a certain point when you look at some of these install scripts, you realize that the time that's been invested in correcting all of the errors in that install script, there would have been that time could have been spent learning a build system that would have then bypassed all of those problems. And I'm speaking very much from experience here, because I've definitely written several install scripts and then I go to a different computer and try to run the install script and I realize there are just enough differences on this other computer that my install script cannot be relied upon. And that's exactly what you do not want. So you tweak it and you put in your if and your then and your else statements, and then you realize something else is wrong, and so you come up with another system and you check for a folder, does or doesn't exist, and if it does, then we'll go this path, and if it doesn't, we'll go that other path. And soon you've got, like, you know, several hundred lines of installation processes, and you still haven't even accounted for the possibility that their system might not be in English, or you haven't accounted for the possibility that they might not be running a free desktop at all, and maybe they're just trying to get this thing on a headless, sort of a headless subsystem of their own, with some other user structure above it. So be careful when you're deciding to write your own shell script for installation, or when you're trying to write your own makefile, because I guarantee you all of the different problems you'll discover throughout the life of that makefile or that shell script doesn't even compare to the stuff that other people have already discovered and accounted for in the default makefile that comes out of AutoMake. And that's what we'll talk about right after this message from our sponsor, Coffee. We're back, armed with coffee. Hopefully you've got your cup of coffee. This is a little bit of a weird one, because we're halfway through the episode and we haven't even looked, I don't think, at the package itself that we're talking about. So we might as well do that really quick right now, just to kind of get that out of the way. By the way, I don't know if you noticed that the coffee music was a little bit quieter this time, because I did get an email from a listener who said that they were attempting to fall asleep to my show, which I don't know how to take that, but this person was trying to fall asleep to my show, and the coffee music woke him up, startled him, and woke him from his otherwise peaceful slumber. So I have toned down the music just ever so slightly to try to make it a little bit less abrupt. So if you've noticed that and you enjoyed that, you're welcome. If you didn't notice any difference, then I apologize. Okay, so in var log packages AutoMake, there are two binaries that have been distributed with this, user bin aclocal-1.15 and user bin automake-1.15. All right, so that's just two commands that we have to cover, and we will cover them through this little demo, and so they'll kind of sneak up on us a little bit, but now we know what to look for, aclocal and automake. Okay, so we're gonna, and then there's some other stuff in the package, which I know I don't necessarily always cover, but I think it's kind of worth mentioning, because there are some macros that will be kind of important to understand some things about. So let's get started on our little demo here. I'm going to make a directory in my demo folder, and I shall call it AutoTools Demo. That works. So we already know from the previous talk that we had about AutoConf that the first step to standing up an AutoTools project, or at least the first step as I think of it, I mean, technically speaking, you could do all of this in any order, I guess, but we'll start with configure.ac, and you remember configure.ac potentially from last time. It started out with some macros like ac_init, which was an AutoConf macro, m4 macro. ac_init parentheses square bracket hello world close square bracket comma square bracket 0.0.2 this time, because one was the previous episode in my mind, square bracket comma square bracket clat2@member.fsf.org square bracket and parentheses closing. Okay, so now we're going to invoke a new macro that we've never seen before, and frankly neither has AutoConf. It is am_init_automake. So this is kind of, I mean, as you might guess from the name of it, this is an init function within automake, or rather it is an initialization macro distributed with automake. So from the documentation, helpful as ever, on gnu.org/software/automake. If you go to the manuals and look in chapter 6, section 4, subsection 1, public macros, am_init_automake, parentheses square bracket options, close square bracket parentheses, it says that this macro, and I'm quoting, runs many macros required for proper operation of the generated makefiles, close quote. That is what it has to say about that macro. So if you really want to know what this macro does, I guess you're going to have to go read the source code of the macro, because that's not very helpful. I don't feel like that's very helpful. So anyway, I don't know what this macro does. I've not looked at the source code. I haven't bothered. All I know is that it's a thing that you want to call, and I have some ideas about what it might do, because some of the options are, for instance, -wall, -werror, and foreign. So a lot of those sound like GCC commands, or rather GCC options that are getting passed on to the compiler. So I have a feeling that am_init_automake is probably storing some variables that we are later going to invoke as options, so it's not so mysterious. But I mean, it may well do a lot more than that. I don't know. Point is, this is an am_init, so this is an automake macro. And if you want to see, if you want to try to read the source code, for instance, of that macro, or if you just are curious as to where it comes from, you can look in the package, and you'll find a folder call, or a path to /user/share/automake-1.15/am/, that's not the one I'm looking for, I just realized that as I was saying it out loud. There is instead a path, similar path, boy, I can't find it right now. There it is. User share aclocal-115/, and then a series of m4 macros. And there's one called init.m4. I'm going to guess that's probably where it is, maybe. make.m4, options.m4, a couple of different ones. progcc, com4. So there's a couple of macros in here that are distributed with automake, and that's going to become important. I keep promising you that, and it really will. Very soon we'll see an error that is related to that. So the next macro I'm going to use is ac_prog_cc. We didn't use that previously because I was in my previous configure or AutoConf demo on the previous episode about this stuff, I was using a sample shell script. Well, in this one, I'm going to write some C code. I mean, not much C code. It's going to be like 4 lines of C code. But we want something to compile this time, just because that's kind of the native expectation of Auto Tools. So I figure it's probably better to use some C code just so that something gets compiled. Could have done it with C++, whatever, it doesn't matter. We'll just do it with C to keep it simple. So AC_prog_CC. If you look that one up in the documentation, it explains that it is designed to figure out what compiler it's going to be running. And that's kind of an interesting one, because I used to kind of think, I mean, I don't think I ever actually thought, but I mean, in practice, I thought that there was one compiler, and why would anyone need really to point anything to some other compiler? It just seemed weird to me. But then I started messing around with LLVM, or is it LV? No, LLVM, CLang, that stuff, Clang. And I realized, and it's got some nice features to it, and I realized, well, actually, it's quite reasonable to have to, or to ask your build system to do some investigation and figure out which compiler it's going to be using. Like, really reasonable. So that's why that's important. AC_prog_CC. And of course, I mean, it doesn't have to be GCC versus CLang either, or LLVM, whatever the project is officially called. Because, I mean, certainly on a Solaris box, you're going to be dealing with some other compiler. And on an IRIX box, I guess those still exist. AIX, maybe? I don't know. Whatever. You're going to be maybe possibly dealing with yet another one, and I think Intel has their own compiler and so on. So it's a real thing. It happens. Okay, AC_config_files. I'm pretty sure we did this in the previous episode as well. This is simply defining the make file, or the, I shouldn't say specifically make files, but I've only ever used it for make files. It needs to know what files to look for, or rather to generate, either to generate or to look for, no, yeah, to generate, sorry, when it's generating the files that it needs to generate, because that is what this toolchain is built for. So in this case, we're just going to make a make file here in this directory. Now, if you have a setup where you have like your source directory and you've got your source code in a separate directory from the rest of your files, then maybe you have a separate make file over there just to build, you know, that subdirectory, for instance. And so maybe you need to build a make file and an src/make file, that sort of thing. So you can make this a list pretty easily. You just use a comma delimited list within these square brackets, and that tells AC config files to generate other files. So I equate this a little bit to the RPM sort of property, where when you're building an RPM, you have to tell it what files to expect at the end of it all. And if there's a file that it didn't expect, or if there's a missing file that it does expect, then it warns you, it alerts you of that. And this is more or less similar. It's kind of like, if you don't list the files that you want generated here, it's not going to get generated, and then the thing is going to fail because it can't find the thing that completes the build. And then finally, AC_output. That's the last macro. So most of those are AutoConf macros that we used in the previous episode about AutoConf. There's that one AutoMake one, not a big deal. Next step, well, I guess next step we should write this C code really quick, and that's just going to be 4 lines of code. It's going to be a hello world. So we're going to just do hash include angle bracket standard io.h close standard bracket, so that's stdio.h, and then int main parentheses curly brace, and then printf parentheses, I think, quote hello world close quote close parentheses semicolon, and then return 0 semicolon, and then close the curly bracket. So that is literally 4 lines of code. I mean, it kind of depends on how much white space you put in there, I guess. Make it a lot less, really. But yeah, that's 4 lines of code, so it's pretty simple, admittedly, but we're just trying to get sort of a minimum viable product here. Speaking of minimum viable product, we're going to now create a makefile.am file. So the makefile.am is a little bit like your local customization layer for AutoMake, meaning that at the end of the build process, or at the end of the configuration process, you'll have a makefile in your project directory. And ideally, once again, you'll pass that on to your user, and they'll be able to run, configure, make, install, and make install both run out of the makefile, as we have just seen in the previous segment. So that makefile is essentially just kind of it's built for you. It is created by AutoMake. But there may be some properties that AutoMake doesn't know about, and so you need to tell it that. And then it's also pretty flexible in the sense that you can just add arbitrary stuff into makefile.am, and it'll get copied over word for word, bit for bit, whatever. Over to your makefile. So we'll do both. So the first thing that we have to do is make a sort of a variable called bin_programs. And bin is lowercase, and then there's an underscore, and then programs is all capitals. And we'll do an equal sign, hello world. So that's the name of our binary that's going to be produced. It's kind of the name of the package. This is a sort of an important variable to set. Now, not all makefiles actually have to have a bin_programs. For instance, if there isn't a bin program, then your makefile probably won't have a bin_programs. It might instead have a dist_bin_scripts or something like that. Just something to tell AutoMake that we're not compiling, but we are distributing this script or this file, this arbitrary file, a font file or whatever, who knows. So in this case, we are doing bin_programs because that is our target. We're actually creating a binary entity here. All right, so we've created this entity called hello world. So now we have to point AutoMake to the method it is going to use to generate the thing called hello world. And in this case, I've just gone pretty simple. So I've done hello world, all lowercase, underscore, sources, all capitals, equals main.c. I just called it main.c. So the important thing here is that we've declared that our binary program, bin_programs, is called hello world. So then we have to make a variable that matches that entity. So hello world underscore sources. If I called this hello_sources or my_sources or something else, then AutoMake would fail. AutoMake would fail. We're on makefile.am, so it would be AutoMake that would fail. Because it wouldn't be able to associate your bin programs, the end result of your build process, it wouldn't be able to associate that with any source code. It wouldn't know where to look for your source code, so it would fail. So it's got to be, it would fail pretty early on too, which I guess is yet another advantage to this build system, is that as you're building this thing, as you're standing up your infrastructure, you'll get failures along the way, and you'll know, oh, well, I got that wrong, or this isn't making sense to the build system. I need to go in there and change it. So I've got bin programs, hello world, and then hello world sources equals main.c. Now I'm going to arbitrarily create a function called nuke, and it is something that I very frequently include in my own personal make files, and it is to represent a more lethal make clean. Make clean is usually a pretty conservative thing. I like to do a make nuke so that I can do things like @remove config.status, configure config.log, @remove -r automate.cache, @remove aclocal.m4, and you'll see what all of these things are momentarily, I guess. But the point is that these are a bunch of files that are generated by this, by standing up a build process or a build system, and I like to be able to get it to scale it back all the way back to just kind of the basics. It's not necessary. It's just something that I often do. Okay, so we've got three files now. We've got our configure.ac, which we've already covered really in the previous episode anyway. We've got the source code, main.c, and then we've got makefile.am. Now it is significant that main.c is in the same directory as these files. If we were to place it in a subdirectory, then we would need to restructure our makefile.am. We would have to tell it, we would have to alert it, that there's a subdirectory and it's called src, and then all of our paths would have to match the src slash whatever. I'm leaving that out right now just because while I do think that that's probably very typical, it also is a great way to introduce variables and mistakes. So I'm not doing that right now because I'm trying to keep this really simple. Let's do this. Autoconf is the first command that we ran in the previous episode about auto tools. So we'll do autoconf right now. And we get errors, which in a way is expected. As I said, one of the advantages is to this system is that you get errors early, and that's what you want. You want to know about the problems now before you send it off to your users. Now, this error might not be what one would expect, though. I think with autoconf, we saw some errors, but this is a new one. And it says, possibly undefined macro, am_init automake. Well, I was making a big deal about that one, if you'll recall. And it turns out that this is our first look at automakes, the automake package that we're talking about. So I don't know exactly how one might figure this out, but see the autoconf documentation, that's what it says. So it turns out that the aclocal command is the solution to this problem. And aclocal, according to its info page here, it says automake includes a number of autoconf macros that can be used in your package. Some of them are actually required by automake in certain situations. These macros must be defined in your aclocal.m4, otherwise they will not be seen by autoconf. So as I've said before, technical documentation, bizarrely passive, quite indirect. What it's trying to say here is run aclocal. So that's all of that decoded. It does, third paragraph down, it does at least say, at startup, aclocal scans all the m4 files it can find, looking for macro definitions. Then it scans configure.ac. Any mention of one of those macros found in the first step causes that macro, and any macros it in turn requires, to be put into aclocal.m4. So once again, what they're trying to say here in really, really a passive voice where no one does anything, it just all sort of somehow magically happens, is that aclocal scans your configure.ac, and it takes note of any macro it doesn't recognize, and then it looks at your system and tries to locate that macro. And maybe I got the order of that mixed up. Who cares? Doesn't matter. Point is, aclocal marries system macros to your local project directory. Why the macros on a system aren't all just put into the same directory somewhere, I don't know. And maybe it's just a problem with literally just not being able to control who names what macro by what file name. I would think that just saying, okay, well, if you're writing a macro for AutoTools, you have to have like a unique prefix, AC for AutoConf, AM for AutoMake. And I'm not talking about the macros themselves, because they obviously do, AM_init_automake, AC_prog_CC. Those are clearly sort of a namespace claiming is happening there. So I don't know why they don't just do that for the files. There may be a very good reason. I mean, it might just, who knows. But point is, if your local project directory can't find the definition for something like am_init_automake, it essentially sees that as an external macro, a third-party macro. And so if you run aclocal, it runs quite quickly, on my system at least. And now if I do an ls, I have a new file, and there's a couple new files in my directory. One is aclocal.m4, and if I look at that, it looks like just a bunch of macros got copy and pasted into a file. And if I do a wc.l on aclocal.m4, it's 1,152 lines of macro code. So that took care of that. And then there's this directory autom4te.cache, and then there's the configure script, which is what we were aiming for with autoconf anyway. So at this point, I could run .configure. And as expected, just because of the previous episode, we get some errors, and this time it's telling us, hey, it can't find install-sh, install.sh, or shtool. So I'm pretty sure we covered this in the autoconf episode, but we must have, because it's autoreconf is the solution here. So autoreconf, running that, and it gives me an error as well. It's all right. It's to be expected, believe it or not. And this is our first brush with automake. Well, Yeah, it is our first brush with AutoMake, because the other one that we did was AC Local. So this is actually AutoMake. This is the command for which the package has been named. And it tells us in the error output of AutoReconf to run AutoMake dash dash add dash missing. And that ought to, it claims, that that's going to solve all of our problems. So I'll run that, and it actually still gives me some errors here. So it's telling me that it can't find a news file, so I'll touch news. It can't find a readme file, so I'll touch readme. Can't find authors, A-U-T-H-O-R-S, and it cannot find changelog, which bizarrely, unlike all of the other ones, are not all capitalized. So touched all those files, and then we're going to do one more auto make add missing just for good measure. Okay, that's happy now. And so where were we? I think maybe we were doing like auto reconf. Yeah, auto reconf, and that's happy. So no more errors. So we've got all the required files in our project directory. And if I do an ls, there are quite a lot of files now. aclocal.m4, didn't write that one. Authors, it's empty. Auto m4te.cache, changelog, compile, that's a symlink. Let's find out where that's a symlink to. So there's this compile script or something, and that's a symlink to slash user share automake dash 1.15 slash compile. So that's good to know. Config.log, configure, we ran that already, or we haven't run that yet. Configure.ac, that's what generated the configure file, and then there's a copying file, which again is a symlink to a user share automake. Location, depcomp, another symlink, install, another symlink, install dash sh, another symlink, main.c, that's our source code, makefile.am, that is what made the next file, which is makefile.in, as in input. So makefile.in, well, okay, so, and then there's missing, that's a symlink, and then news and readme, so, and those are both empty. So, okay, so makefile.in, if I do a wc-l on that one, that's 736 lines of code. And I can even look at it right now and kind of scroll through it a little bit. It looks like it's a bunch of temporary settings. So for instance, just randomly here, taking a couple, there's libs, all capital, equals, at libs at, there's make info equals at make info at. So there's all these sort of, they look like temporary sort of placeholders that I can imagine are going to be swapped out with values that are probably extracted from my system upon running, say, a dot slash configure script or something. Okay. At the bottom of this makefile.in file, we see, sure enough, nuke, a nuke rule copied exactly as I had it in my makefile.am. It's just right here at the bottom. So like I said, the stuff that you put in your makefile.am gets used when the makefile is being constructed. And no makefile exists yet, but makefile.in is kind of the skeleton template for the actual makefile. And that, I mean, if we look at automake, info automake, doesn't come up. That's really surprising. I would have thought that would have given me a man page for that, but it doesn't. Okay, so if I do man automake, oh, that's very interesting. I wonder why info didn't find that man page. That was the big selling point for info, not just a few episodes ago. Anyway, automake man page says the job of automake, the command, is to, and I quote, generate makefile.in for configure from makefile.am. So, end quote. So that's really it. That was automake. That step sort of right there to fill in the missing files and so on. And somewhere in there, through all the missing files and such, a makefile.in got created for us. 736 lines of code, give or take, that we didn't have to write. And it's pretty much set up. In this state here, where it is right now, I could sort of pass this on to a user and they would have a pretty good starting point. Now there's an easy way to get it to your user, or to get it into the state that your user might be able to use it, and that is to first run configure on your own, on your development machine, dot slash configure. Seems to be happy. It says it's created a makefile. Let me do an ls to find out if that's true. Yep, it made a proper makefile. I will just for fun do a wc-l on that makefile. 736 lines, so probably no different than the makefile.in. Well, it must be somewhat different because it wouldn't have all the temporary locations. And certainly if I look at it, yeah, it looks like a lot of this stuff has gotten filled in. So data dir equals $ curly brace data root dir. Well, if you've ever in man dir, $ curly brace data root dir slash man, and so on. So if you've ever done a .slash configure --options, oops, not --options, --help, then you get all kinds of options that let you customize the way that your application gets built. And this is what you do all day long if you're maintaining or messing around with Slack build packages. You'll get to you look in a Slack build script and you'll see that they're setting things like libdir equals /user/lib64 instead of just /user/lib. Bindir, you'll see that it's setting that to, or actually the prefix it sets to /user instead of, for instance, /user/local/bin, and so on. We won't customize anything this time, just so that we're doing everything as simply as possible, but that's a possibility that you can do. That's one of the things that .slash configure affords you. That's the luxury that it provides. So it's really nice. And it's something that you get with your build system. Again, if you had your own build script, if you had your own just shell script that was just going to copy files to someone's system, they wanted it to go to user local and not user bin, and you never thought of that before, or they want it to go into $home/bin or /opt. I mean, who knows what people come up with? Then if you didn't account for that in your shell script, then your user either won't be able to do that or would have to go in and change your script, and it's just not efficient. So this is the kind of thing that you just get for free with a good build system. All right, so we did a .slash configure, so we're ready to go. If I type in make, ideally, hello world ought to be generated. And I just typed in make, actually, and in no time, I've got a new file, yet one more file in my folder, and it's called, well, actually a couple of files, because there's main.o, but the file that I'm distributing here is called hello world, and it is executable, and if I do a .slash hello world, I get echoed back, I get a printf of hello world, so that part is a success. Now here's another cool thing. I'm going to do a make dir /temp, and then I'll do auto tools -demo, or just outtool.demo-demo, whatever, doesn't matter. So now if I do a make install, wait, I'm not pressing return yet, destdir, and that's all capitals, equals, no space, just destdir equal sign, and then /temp/outtool-demo. Press return, it says some stuff, looks like it pretty much worked, and now if I do an ls on /temp/outtool-demo, I see that there is a user directory in there. Okay, that's going to take a while, so I'm just going to do a tree/temp/outtool-demo, and I see that the structure of this thing is temp/outtool-demo, and then user local bin, and hey, there's my hello world binary right there in my destination directory. So I could, in other words, I could run the install command of this package, but I could point it to a place that I don't actually want it to get installed to. I do want it to get installed there, but not permanently, probably. But what the advantage here is that now I can go into temp/outtool-demo and run make package on Slackware and make a Slackware package out of that location, and then distribute that Slackware package to anyone who wants to install the binary. Now, why they would want to install my binary distribution of a command that they could compile themselves, I can't imagine. But some people like it that way, and so that's what you could provide. And alternately, if you have a bunch of computers, why would you compile it on every single computer? I know there are some people who say, well, it is worth it, optimizations, blah, blah, blah. But for me, I just figure if I'm running 3 different Slackware machines or 100 different Slackware machines, build it on your build machine and then just send the binary package out to all the computers and install the binary. So that, again, that's what you get for free with a build system. You get that destdir or some similar, you know, with AutoTools it's destdir. With other build systems, it's something else like --root or --tree or --local, whatever. Doesn't matter. Point is, you get that sort of redirection, fake root kind of functionality, and boy, is it nice. And once again, that's you can program that yourself, or you can let someone else do it for you, and that's the advantage here. So, just to kind of keep track. We got a WC-L of makefile.am configure.ac. That's a total of 18 lines of code that I had to write, or that I chose to write, for in exchange for makefile.in. What's the other one that I got for free? Configure. The configure script itself. 5,474 lines of code. And I know that this is a very simple project. This is a Hello World project. In real life, you're probably going to have to write more than 18 lines. Let me see how much some of my custom make files are for docbook stuff. I'm just curious now. 118 lines. So let's say that you had to write 118 lines for your makefile.am, or 118 lines for your configure and your makefile.am, or whatever, or 200 or 300 or 1,000 lines between several make files. Who knows? Or makefile.ams, I mean. Who knows? Point is, in the end, you're getting over 5,000 lines of code for free. And I'm not saying just lines of code, like that's not that big of a deal, but the functionality of those 5,474 lines of code is a big deal. It makes all the difference. So here's one more thing you can do. And again, I mean, we got 5,000 lines here, so I should hope you'd be able to do this. You can do a make dist. So make dist creates a little redistributable package for you. In this case, it's called Hello World, because that's what we set our bin program to. That is what we set that to, but we also didn't we set that in configure.ac? Yeah, Hello World is the name of the package. That's where that's set. So Hello World, and then the version 002. So it creates Hello World -0.0.2.tar.gz, and if I do a tar tvf on that package, I see that it is in a distinct directory, so I'm going to then extract it, because I can safely. Now I'm going to go into that package, and I see, you know, exactly what I saw pretty much in my previous folder. This is the important parts of my source code, or my source package, I should say. It's got the AC local file in there. It's got this configure script in there. It's got an install file to tell people. Well, I don't. Does that install file actually say anything? Yes, it does. It's the standard install file telling people, hey, run .configure make install, or sudo make install, whatever. It's got my makefile.am, makefile.in, and my source code. Source code is important. So this thing here is pretty much set up for your users. This is the thing that you would push to your releases in GitLab or your Git server or on your FTP server, wherever you're storing this stuff. This is the thing you would point people to. You wouldn't point necessarily people to this ugly folder back one step with all the bits and pieces lying around. You would send them to this dist package that you've built that has been versioned. It's got all of the necessary components in it. So they download it, they do a .configure make install, they're done. Now, even just as importantly, possibly more importantly, other people, other infrastructure people can download this and build packages around it. And that is, I think, in that Hack Republic Radio show that I talk about auto tools, that's one of the main reasons I feel one of the other main reasons for using a build system is that people who are packaging software, it is not their desire nor their job to take the code and then build a build system around it. So if you provide package maintainers with a build system, then, and especially if it's a well-known build system, which AutoTools is, then a lot of the tooling around their packaging format is already set up to run your build. So for instance, with an RPM, you can write an RPM installer for any given AutoTools project in probably, I don't know, 20, 30, 80 lines, whatever it is. It's believe me, it's verbose, but it's really simple too, because the actual meat of the thing is pretty much like, I think, it's like prepare and then, you know, build and then you list your files and that's it. Like that's basically it. So you, I guess in a way you're writing a complete RPM package in three functions or three macros, with three macros. And that's it. That's all you have to do. Same thing for a Slack build, really. I mean, again, very verbose because there's a lot of metadata and a lot of code, but all that stuff is pasted in there for you. The the main part of the build, if it's auto tools, is just the setting of some build flags and some build options, and you're done. That's it. Everything just kind of goes, and there's a bunch of variables already in the script, so you don't even have to change names of packages and stuff. It all just gets distributed correctly throughout the script. Same thing for Debian packages and, you know, any other kind of package. If they have accounted for your build system, then their package maintainers are able to leverage the fact that you've used that build system. I think that's it. I think you get the idea here. AutoMake, again, converts a makefile.am to a makefile.in, and the makefile.in, of course, becomes the makefile. aclocal scans the system for M4 macros and makes sure that your project has access to the macros that it needs in order to run configure.ac correctly, which then, of course, provides the user with a configure script. That is AutoMake. Two episodes ago, that was AutoConf. That's the main meat of AutoTools. Those are the two sort of workhorses of AutoTools. I hope that was somewhat informative. I know that the process can be very tangled sometimes because you think, okay, now I'm ready to go, and then you run something and it says, oh, it's an error because you don't have this file and that file and so on, and so then you're building and you're rebuilding and you're confing and reconfing and so on. It's not really that troublesome though. It's just a matter of kind of standing things up, and then once it's all in place, it's just such a breeze to maintain. It's really, really nice, and it's so darned reliable. Just whatever system you throw at it, it can adapt to. Not literally, but nearly. So it's a really nice system. I'm not saying it's the only system or even the best system. There are other build systems out there. I don't have all that much experience with them. Certainly I don't have experience sort of standing them up. AutoTools is pretty much all I've used so far. So I'm not saying that this is like the best and the only one you should ever use. If you like, I don't know, Maven or Gradle or setup tools for Python or whatever else there is out there, then by all means, go for it. Try it. What with Meson and Ninja, there's a bunch out there. So yeah, you can play around with those. I think what I'm really saying is that build systems are cool and that you should check them out if you're developing code or developing anything that you want to distribute in an organized and kind of regimented fashion and versioned, because this does make it very easy to keep versioning straight as well. So check out a build system, learn the one that you're interested in or that you're comfortable with or that makes sense for your project, and then go use it. This has been AutoTools. Thanks for listening. I will talk to you next time. Thank you for listening to the GNU World Order Ogcast. This has been Klaatu. You can reach me on IRC. I'm on the Freenode network usually in channels such as Ogcast Planet, Slacker Media, Slackware, a couple of others. My nick on IRC is not Klaatu. You can also reach me lately on Mastodon. My username there is @klaatu@mastodon.xyz. Of course, you can email me at klaatu@member.fsf.org. That's klaatu@member.fsf, as in Free Software Foundation, .org. And of course, you can visit my various websites, gnuworldorder.info and slackermedia.info. I will see you next time.
put into the picture a real demon which you could see walking through the forest.